Now, here's the way the debate is going to work tonight. I will be asking some questions that have been submitted either from the audience that has shown up here in Bigelow Hall or from the WHAS-TV viewers who have emailed their questions throughout the week. I'm going to open with one of those questions, and both candidates will be given 60 seconds to answer that question, which will be of the broad nature that both of you can answer. Then the reporters will ask questions of the individual candidates. This is a question from a WHAS-TV viewer who says, are you in favor or opposed to the Supreme Court decision that allows unlimited corporate dollars in the election process, and why do you hold that position? Mr. Yarmuth, you're first.
I'm glad you asked that. This is the Citizens United decision. When I heard this decision, I thought of the song, The Day the Music Died, and I thought of it in terms of this is the day democracy died. What the Supreme Court did was not only give corporations the same rights as individuals, it gave them superior rights because CEOs at major corporations already have their individual rights to contribute. This decision not only did that, but it gave corporations superior rights and gave them the right to anonymity. Because as we're seeing on television day after day, tens of millions of dollars are being spent anonymously to advance either the election of a particular candidate or to advocate the defeat of a particular candidate. We already have too much money in politics. I've been a strong supporter and a primary sponsor of public financing of federal elections. This undermines democracy, and unfortunately, our Republican colleagues in the Senate have rejected and blocked our attempts to create transparency to try to combat the effects of Citizens United.
Okay, Mr. Lally, 60 seconds.
I think public financing of elections is where, once you have hit socialism, that's when you have public financing for elections. I find that to be an extreme position. Corporations are just entities made up of people. Corporations are people. They are not some nameless organization. These are people. They have a First Amendment right, and the Supreme Court said that they should have it, and I agree with the Supreme Court.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we'll go to the questions from reporters. Joe Arnold will ask the first question to Todd Lally.
Mr. Lally, you have said in your opening statement that you are can be in Congress to get the tough jobs done. Arguably, there's no tougher job if you, in fact, want to reduce taxes and reduce spending to balance the budget without cutting some programs. So specifically, what programs that are now in the federal budget would you cut to be able to get a balanced budget by reducing taxes and spending?
Well, I'd like to see us go back to 2008 spending levels. That would save $100 billion right there. Everything that John votes for is more spending, more spending. We have a spending problem. We don't have a tax problem. This country is spending too much money. We need to have people that go up there and look for ways to stop spending, not continue spending. So just going back to 2008 would be one thing. We could do several other things in the military. I have 22 years in the military. I've seen so many inefficiencies, so much waste in the military. I know where we can make changes that wouldn't cut our defense and it wouldn't cut our readiness, but it would certainly make it more efficient for the military to operate and train its soldiers and sailors and airmen. So I know a lot of things like that. I'm encouraged that there's so many other candidates running that they will know how to save things in their specialty. And when we get up there and take this house back, you're going to see massive cuts to spending because that's what the American people want.
Okay, Mr. Yarmuth, 30-second response.
One of the things that Mr. Lally just said was he wanted a free spending at 2008 limits. If he did that, it would represent one of the biggest cuts to spending for health care for veterans in our history. We have made remarkable strides over the last 4 years in finally paying attention to our veterans and providing for the care they need. Freezing spending at 2008 limits would eliminate all of that. And if you note, he did not mention one specific thing he would cut, which was actually the question.
I'll follow up, Mr. Lally. Just first of all, point of clarity, are you saying that the overall defense budget would be lower by virtue of your rooting out inefficiencies, number one?
Well, what I'm saying is there are so many inefficiencies. There's ways that we can improve. Because of the federal government, the way that it's set up, when you have a fiscal year that ends September 30th, there's a lot of people in the government that they hold that money until the last month, and then they go on frivolous spending sprees where they're buying leather couches and TVs because there's a use it or lose it mentality in the government. And we got to eliminate that to be able to save money.
30 seconds, John Yarmuth.
Well, I agree with that. And as a matter of fact, we've put into place new procurement policies in the Defense Department that have eliminated many of the abuses that Mr. Lally talked about. There are some things we can do. We now have bases in 63 countries. We have troops in 120. We need to examine all of those because we don't need to have all of those troops around the world. We can't police the entire world. We're still paying farm subsidies to very, very wealthy Americans who don't need them. That's an area we can look at for savings as well.
Okay, Joe Girth, you have a question for John Yarmuth.
Yes, thank you. Congressman Yarmuth, in the 9 years we've been in Afghanistan, 1,300 Americans have died. We're still fighting fierce opposition on the ground there. Do you believe the war is winnable? If so, how would you define winning that war, and what should our course of action be?
No, I don't think the term winnable applies to Afghanistan, Joe, and I don't believe that the president has yet to express a clear definition of the mission that we have there or provided metrics for measuring whether we are succeeding or not. I'm very, very frustrated with the policy administration. I've expressed that to them, and I will not continue to support funding for our efforts in Afghanistan unless we have a clear mission statement, and we have again metrics for deciding whether we're actually succeeding or not. But the term winning in Afghanistan is not even a significant term. What we're talking about is trying to create an environment in which terrorism does not flourish, in which Afghanistan cannot serve as a base for terrorist activities. That's not a question of winning. Our military are doing a phenomenal job given the tasks they have, but the mission has not been clearly expressed, and I wish we would do that.
Mr. Lally, 30 seconds.
Okay, I guess my first question is, did we win in Iraq? We pulled our troops out of combat. Did we win? Did we achieve anything there? Were there any benchmarks where you said, I'm going to vote to bring our troops out of Iraq because we have accomplished something? Can you say with a straight face that we accomplished something in Iraq?
Am I supposed to
I'll give you 30
question?
Seconds in a minute. Is that the end
okay.
of your answer?
Then the other question is, you've been in Congress now for almost 4 years. When have you been to Iraq or Afghanistan?
Again, Mr. Lally, is that the end of your
okay,
response?
No. There is a way to win in Afghanistan. I served in Afghanistan. When you have schoolrooms filled with young girls, that's winning in Afghanistan. When you pave roads and you branch the community, bring them together, that's winning in Afghanistan. When you have people who are illiterate reading, that's winning.
Okay. John Yarmuth, hold your applause, please. Ladies and gentlemen, we stated the rules beforehand. Please hold your applause until after the closing arguments. Okay, thank you very much. John Yarmuth, 30 seconds to respond.
I agree that that would be successful. I don't know if I would define that as winning. And the question was, are we winning a war in Afghanistan? And I don't think we are, nor can we. I was opposed to our involvement in Iraq from day one. I wrote about it extensively in 2002 and 3, and I think I was right. Absolutely value beyond measure the sacrifice that many families made in Iraq. But do I think we accomplished significant things for world security? No, I don't, actually. We got rid of Saddam Hussein, but in the process of doing that, we had empowered Iran.
That's the time.
Okay, sorry.
And Todd Lally, go ahead, another 30 seconds.
And then the follow-on is, you've been in Congress 4 years. Have you ever taken, they do congressional junkets over there all the time. When I served over there, I flew some of them around. When have you taken the time to go visit our troops in Iraq or Afghanistan?
You can answer, John. Go ahead.
I have not actually visited Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan, but I have been consistently briefed by Defense Department and State Department officials on a regular basis, and I've talked to many colleagues who have been there. I don't know that you necessarily have to set foot in the place to understand the dynamics and the politics of the situation.
Okay, let's move on. John Yarmuth took your time. Is that okay, Todd?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. This question comes from Mark Humphrey. He's a community member. He said, would you repeal the stimulus package? And this question goes to both candidates. And Todd Lally, you answer first.
Okay, the stimulus package, $787 billion. Does anybody feel stimulated? We have 10% unemployment. We've had it for 16 months. Clearly, this program is failing. The Courier-Journal reported just the other day that payments were made to dead people and prisoners. This is more fraud, waste, and abuse, and we have to stop it. The money that hasn't been spent yet in the stimulus should be returned back to the Treasury to pay down our $14 trillion of debt.
Okay, John Yarmuth, 60 seconds.
In the 3rd District alone, 830 new jobs are coming to General Electric Appliance Park because of programs financed by the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. We have a new facility at TARC, 82 new jobs, a brand new maintenance facility because of the stimulus fund. We have 2,400 projects going on in this community right now. We have sidewalks being reconstructed. We have hundreds and hundreds of teachers and people in our educational system, policemen, firefighters, all because the federal government stepped in to make up the difference when state budgets were depleted and when this country was on the verge of a deeper recession. The American Reinvestment and Recovery Act has made a difference. Has it brought employment down to 5%? No. But according to most objective observers, including the CBO, there are 3 million people now employed who would otherwise not be employed had it not been for the action we took.
Okay, Joe Arnold, a question for John Yarmuth.
We'll follow up on stimulus.
Sure.
Even with that, the U.S. economy is producing an estimated maybe 100,000 jobs a month,
right,
which does not even keep pace with population growth. Given that, what is the government's role in creating jobs, in your estimation?
Well, I think the role of the government is what we've been doing, and that is to kind of try to create the environment with tax credits and tax incentives to get the private sector to create jobs. One of the things that's frustrating, and I just saw a survey the other day, only 7% of major corporations said they actually intended to hire people, in spite of the fact that they're sitting on almost $2 trillion worth of money. What has happened is major businesses in this country have figured out how to make very big profits without hiring more people. So we have to look to small businesses and moderate-sized businesses to do that. We just passed in the Congress a major jobs bill with 16 different tax credits and tax cuts for small business to try to incentivize them to hire, $30 billion of lending capacity for community banks to make loans to small businesses. This is the kind of activity that the federal government can do. We can't hire people, we can't create jobs, well, we can create jobs directly, the political environment is not such, but we can create the environment for the private sector to create jobs, and that's what we've been trying to do.
Mr. Lally, 30 seconds.
Well, I've talked to small businesses all over this district. I say, why can't you have jobs? Why aren't you growing your plants and equipment and all that stuff? And they say, because the government won't stop. This Congress will not stop raising our taxes. John, you voted the other day to leave Washington without addressing the most important tax issue in our country's history, probably. And it passed by one vote, your vote.
Okay. Follow up? You good? Joe Girth?
Quick follow up, if
right.
I could.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead, Joe.
Mark. Would you support then, given the stimulus's record, another stimulus?
It depends on how it was done. The stimulus that we passed, $787 billion over 2 years, included one-third of it was tax cuts to 95% of the American people. Now, most of the American people don't know they got a tax cut, but in fact, they did. A lot of it was to shore up the budgets that states where they were short to maintain hiring at the state and local level. One of the things that I would consider doing is if we actually had investment in infrastructure, which does create jobs and makes an important investment that will reap benefits for the economy over the long term. But that's the only kind of stimulus that I think I would consider.
Mr. Lally, you want any more time on that?
I've got one more comment. To create jobs, you got to create demand. And when you're taking people's money and taxes, and when you're not allowing seniors to have a cost of living allowance for 2 years in a row, that's not going to create demand. You know, we need stability in this environment. We need stability in this economy. And you have failed on both avenues of that.
Can I respond to that? Because
sure.
He's just made an irresponsible comment that actually indicates an incredible lack of understanding of the system. COLAs are not decided by Congress. COLAs are decided by a formula that was set up many, many years ago based on a formula determining whether there is an increase in inflation or not. Congress has nothing to do with that. So to make a statement that we in some way denied seniors COLA is irresponsible and, again, ignorant.
Are you saying that the seniors didn't get COLA?
No, I'm saying Congress. You said that we denied.
Second
you
year
said
in a row,
we
seniors on Social Security are not getting
you
a COLA.
Said that, and we,
the second
okay,
year.
You
one
said
at a time,
that we
one
denied.
Time.
No, you said that we denied seniors a COLA, which we did not. We have nothing to do with that.
Your response, Todd Lally.
My response is seniors for the second year in a row did not get COLA.
Okay, let's move on. Joe Girth, question for Todd Lally.
Mr. Lally, this afternoon a federal judge issued an injunction against enforcement of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. You, in a debate this past spring, said that gays are already serving in the military, but that your concern was that you did not want openly gay behavior. My question is, how do you define openly gay behavior? What sort of behavior are you worried about?
1 minute. Okay, that's is this PG-13 or what are we talking here? I have said about don't ask, don't tell, and this is based on being a lieutenant colonel in the military, 22 years of service, and being in 3 wars. I know what it's like to live in a tent with 10 men for a year at a time. And this argument is not about gays being in the military. Gays are in the military. It's about openly gay behavior being allowed in the military and in a military environment. And I've said that I was against that based on my experience.
Okay, Mr. Yarmouth, 30 seconds.
I voted for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell as part of the Defense Department Authorization Act. I think it's a policy whose time is long gone. Admiral Mullen, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and Secretary Gates have both said that they see no place for it in today's modern military. Again, we're denying basic rights to millions and millions of people who would want to serve in the military, and without denying their sexual orientation. This is not about behavior. This is about identity, and I strongly oppose Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and hope we complete the repeal of it.
Joe.
Mr. Lally, you didn't answer the question, which was, what openly gay behavior, how do you define that, and what are you concerned about?
Joe, this is a family affair. I mean, you know what gay behavior is. I mean, you're acting like you don't know what it is. Everybody knows what it is. And when you see it, you'll know.
Hold on. All right. That's enough, folks. I'm going to have to ask you to leave if you're not going to stay a little calmer, okay? I understand it was a humorous moment here, but let's give the candidates our undivided attention here. Okay. John, did you want any...
Well, I think, it's somewhat inconsistent to say that gays have been serving in the military for years and then to say this is about gay behavior. If gays have been serving in the military for years, obviously there has been some understanding and some accommodation and they've behaved extremely well and normally and in line with service requirements. I mean, this is nonsense. I mean, we're denying basic rights to American citizens who want to serve their country. There is no justification for doing that.
All right. I'm gonna lead you into a softball question that I never used to ask when I was a reporter. But it's one from a college student, Krista, I believe, Worthy, I believe is her name. As a college student, this is my first time voting. Why should I vote for you? John Yarmouth, you have 1 minute.
Well, I appreciate that. I think I've shown over my 4 years a couple things. One is that I absolutely listen to people, that I'm out in the community, I understand the needs and the challenges that face many of our citizens. I've been able to work with General Electric and Ford and UPS. I have the support of the management of Ford, the union there, the management of GE, the union there, the management of UPS, and the Teamsters there. I think that shows that I can work in a balanced way to solve problems, to create jobs. I am a business person. I actually started businesses. My brothers are both entrepreneurs. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. I understand what motivates a business person to start a business and what affects his or her decisions as to whether to hire or not. And I think I bring that expertise to Congress, and I'd like to continue to do that.
Todd Lally, why should a college student vote for you?
Because of 10% unemployment. When she has, when she graduates from college, there's a 10% chance she's not going to get a job. And so the young people, and a recent poll has shown that they're more now leaning towards me, which has shocked John. But young people realize that the future is theirs, and right now the future doesn't look good. You could be graduating from college and you already owe $40,000 because that is your part of the debt. When we have $14 trillion of debt, what are the outcome? What's on the horizon for a young college person? That's why they need to vote for Todd Lally, because we need to change course.
Joe Arnold from WHAS-TV, you have the next question for Todd Lally.
Todd, in the last year, Congressman Yarmouth has announced a number of grants for this area, most recently a $6 million grant from the Department of Justice that's going to allow approximately 32 new police officers to be hired by Metro Police. There was a grant for, I think, $700,000 plus to expand internet access at the Louisville Free Public Library, a couple $1 million in the Butchel area to convert a church into low-cost housing for senior citizens. Are you in opposition to any of those uses of federal dollars, or are there any grants that Congressman Yarmouth has helped secure that you would not secure yourself as a congressman?
I think all three of those are reasonable. I like to see money getting spread through the community. They all sound like good projects. I'm glad to see that the police are getting what they want, because I know my brother, who's a city fireman, the firemen oftentimes weren't getting what they needed at the firehouses, and so I'm glad to see that there is money like that. I do believe that it is a congressman's job to make sure some federal dollars come back to their district, and that's why I'm so supportive of an East End Bridge.
John Yarmouth, 30 seconds.
No, it's been a great honor for me to try to bring back federal resources to the district. Kentucky's one of those states that actually is a net beneficiary of federal contributions and federal spending, and I continue to fight for everything that we can, including, for instance, the $45 million enhanced by $30 million that Mitch McConnell did for the new VA hospital. We continue to fight for every bit of federal assistance that we can, as long as it's going for valid public purposes, and that's what I've restricted to all of my activities to.
Okay, time's up. Mm-hmm. Did you want to follow up or not?
Could we stay on VA hospital? Would you grant me a question on that, Joe? Okay, since we're talking about that,
I'm giving you some leeway here.
I appreciate that. In the last month or so, there has been several more sites suggested, or the Veterans Administration has brought up as possible locations for a new VA hospital near Mercy High School, near Holiday Manor, Zorn as well. I'm forgetting one. Near the Ford plant on Chamberlain Lane, as well as, of course, the original location on Zorn Avenue and downtown, which U of L and the city favors. I want to ask both of you, which site, if we have to hold your feet to the fire tonight, which one site do you recommend, and will you advocate for a site if the community is of a consensus?
Let's go to Mr. Lally first, as he answered first.
Okay,
seconds.
I've got actually a lot of experience in this. I held a forum for veterans. We sent out 19,000 invitations. We held the forum at the American Legion, and we talked about the site. And clearly, in the veteran community, and I'm a member of the VFW, they want their hospital on Zorn Avenue.
And so you
and would. I would certainly support them on that.
John Yarmouth?
Well, when I came into office 4 years ago, the first thing I did, one of the first things, was to meet with the VA and to talk about the selection process. And what they said at that point was that we had really no say in it. They were going to decide. They had a set of criteria that they used, most of which actually are pretty logical, and they involve use of comfort for the family and proximity to doctors and so forth. At my insistence, General Shinseki held a public hearing here. 200 veterans showed up to talk about their preferences. Because of that hearing, the VA did two engineering studies at Zorn to see if they could there was any way they could accommodate the new hospital, again, predicting the use, the needs for the next 50 years. The results of that study have not been released yet, so I'm waiting to hear what they do.
Time's up. Joe, did you want to follow up or not? You good? All right, Joe Girth, you have a question for John Yarmouth.
Okay. Congressman Yarmouth, you've argued that the health reform legislation that was passed by Congress will be good for the vast majority of Americans, but polls show that many, many Americans don't agree with you on that issue. Mm-hmm. Somebody is wrong here. Is it you or is it the people?
Well, it's interesting because we had this discussion last night in a debate, and I went back and checked some of the polling on it. And actually, if you poll the Americans on the individual provisions of the bill, for instance, eliminating discrimination because of pre-existing condition, eliminating annual limits on benefits, lifetime caps, allowing people to stay on their parents' policies until they're 26. All of those features, there's vast support for those. Once you label it, as the media and many people who are opposed to it have done, as Obamacare, it actually gets a majority of opposition, except when you actually look at the opposition, there are a number of people, about 20% of the people who say they're opposed to it, say they wish it had gone further. More toward including a public option or something like that. Again, I'm confident that as we roll this out, and there will be changes made, this is not a perfect bill at all, and unfortunately we have to discuss something that affects 300 million people and 18% of the economy in 60 seconds, which is not exactly conducive to understanding. But I'm convinced that my conversations with the people of this district indicate to me it will meet the demands that they've made of me.
All right, Todd Lally.
Okay. Poll after poll showed that 57% of Americans were not in favor of this bill. Not a single Republican voted for this bill. It's the largest piece of legislation that never before has a Republican supported. There's a reason. It's a bad bill. You tried to deem it through. You followed Nancy Pelosi's lead. You voted for it when Louisville didn't want it. The other thing is, we could not afford it. It's a $1 trillion bill. CBO says it's going to go even higher. So we'll wait to see. There's 1,000 unintended consequences. If you read the bill, there wouldn't have been. Maybe you would have understood it a little more.
Todd, you're absolutely misrepresenting. I said I read the bill. I sat through 20 hours of markup in the Ways and Means Committee. I was on one of the committee that wrote that bill. You continue to say something that's not true. This bill, you're absolutely right. It is not perfect. There will be many unintended consequences. We know that. But we had a meeting in the Ways and Means Committee. Only members, no staff. We said to the Republicans, is there any way we can write a health care reform bill that any one of you can support? And they said, no, absolutely no. We were on our own. We got no help from Republicans and no support.
When Nancy told you to vote for it, though, did you say, well, I want to study it a little bit more? Because she was like, let's pass this bill, then we see what's in it. That's the most reckless thing I've ever seen from a public official in my entire life. Let's pass a $1 trillion bill and not even know what's in it. How do you explain that? How do you stand independently of that?
By the way, the CBO says that it will reduce the deficit by $1.2 trillion over the next 20 years.
You want last word, Todd Lally?
And he also says that they did not cut $500 billion to Medicare, and they did.
Okay. Now, I've got a question for Congressman Yarmuth. Yes, this is from John Clark. Are you in favor of term limits, both of you? 1 minute.
I actually have come 180 degrees on this. I never thought we should have term limits because people of America should have the right to elect anybody they want for as long as they want. Unless we do one of two things, unless we change the way we redistrict congressional seats so that we don't create these districts that are basically secure for one party or the other for the vast majority, or unless we have public financing, which, again, makes sure that incumbents, for the most part, stay in office, I would actually be in favor of term limits now. I would prefer to see one of those other steps taken, but if they're not taken, I would not object at all to term limits.
Todd Lally?
I've also come 180. I came in thinking that, you have a term limit in the House every 2 years, but the voters keep sending you back. And it's problematic when you have people like Barney Frank who keep getting elected, but then they take committee positions that affect all of us as Americans, and we certainly didn't vote for him. So I have come 180 out. I think term limits are a good thing. I think 8 years for members of the House, 12 years for the Senate.
Okay. Joe Arnold, question for John Yarmuth.
Should health care, back to health care, should it be considered a right, a fundamental right to be an American, to have health care? And if so, is that right, does that mean that you have a right to equal health care as other Americans?
No, I don't think you have a right to equal health care. I think everyone has a right to basic quality health care. We're the only country in the industrialized world that does not make sure that every one of its citizens has basic quality health care, affordable health care. We pay right now, because of the way we do this, twice as much per citizen for health care as almost any other country in the world, and we rank 37th in the world in health care. It's not that we don't have the best health care in the world. We do. It's just not available to a lot of people, and we have a lot of people who fall through the cracks and don't have it. 50 million people uninsured in this country right now, almost 1 million bankruptcies a year because of health care costs. That should not happen in the United States of America.
Todd Lally?
My wife has worked in health care since she came out of nursing school at University of Kentucky. Everybody in America got health care. Not everybody had health insurance. 85% of us did. We liked our health insurance until you changed the rules on us, changed the plans. So as we watch 2013 come and 2014, we lose a product that we liked to give 15% of the people who didn't have it the opportunity. Why didn't we work for the 15%?
Okay. Got your question answered. Joe Girth, question for Mr. Lally.
Okay. Mr. Lally, on your website, you call for the appointment of justices who strictly interpret the Constitution. What is your feeling on the way the Commerce Clause has been interpreted over the past 70 years? And do you believe there are any departments, federal departments, that should be eliminated because they are unconstitutional?
I think everybody wants to find the perfect balance of government in our lives. As far as the Constitution goes, There's nowhere in the Constitution that we would have a Federal Aviation Administration, but I think we could all agree we don't want planes flying into each other. There's nowhere in there where it says you're going to have a meat inspector, but we don't want our kids to go to school and eat tainted meat. So I think the Commerce Clause does give Congress the ability to make things more common and make commerce more simpler, but I think it is always perverted to where it goes over the bounds of what the Congress is supposed to do, and everything has fallen under the Commerce Clause. And you said it yourself, that you didn't think that there was a limit on what the government could do. You said that on the Mandy Connell Show.
John, 30 seconds.
I did
John
say
Yarmuth.
That. I said the way that the Commerce Clause has been interpreted, I doubt that there are many limits that, well, actually, I said what I said precisely was I can't think of anything at the time. There are probably some things that that would not fall under the Commerce Clause. But, for instance, a federal decision just recently which upheld the constitutionality of the Health Care Reform Act and the individual mandate said that that is an important thing because we don't choose necessarily when we need health care. We can't do that as human beings. And therefore, if we don't take responsibility for our own health care, we impose that cost on everybody else. Therefore, it becomes part of the Commerce Clause. It's an expansive definition, but we're in a very complicated world.
Okay. Question for both of you. This is from a viewer, J.J. Turner, who asked about global warming and talks about coal use in the state of Kentucky. Where do each of you stand on the cap-and-trade legislation? Todd Lally.
Okay. I would have been against cap-and-trade legislation. I think it hurt Kentucky families, it hurt Kentucky industries, and it made doing business in America harder overall. It provides a very complicated derivatives market to where once you hit your cap on your energy, then you have to trade credits with somebody else. The only people that are benefiting from that are the people in that derivatives market. So I wasn't for that. As far as global warming and cooling, the earth cools, it warms, it does it on its own. It's been doing it for thousands and thousands of years. There's been revelations that the Climate Institute manipulated that data. And so now I don't have any faith in it. There was a time where I was ready to jump on the bandwagon with that. But when that revelation came out, it was around the same time as last summer where we had the coolest summer we ever had in Louisville. So I think there's a lot of manipulated data, and I don't think that the other side is making a clear argument that cap and trade is needed.
Mr. Yarmuth?
Again, 60 seconds or 30 seconds is not a lot of time to talk about this. When we were confronted with the Waxman-Markey bill, Barron Hill and Ben Chandler and I actually opposed the original version. We worked to get it changed so that it would not adversely affect Kentucky businesses. That's why Ford, GE, both supported. The Kentucky Energy Department said this, or Cabinet said this will create tens of thousands of jobs in Kentucky. Here's the facts. The EPA is under an order by the Supreme Court to regulate carbon emissions. If we don't act legislatively to make sure that whatever restriction comes into play, it takes account of Kentucky's particular situations in Indiana's, then the EPA is going to rule, and actually they're working on those now. And that's actually has potential to do much more damage to Kentucky consumers and businesses than what we were proposing to do.
Joe Arnold, question for Todd Lally.
When House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was in Louisville over the summer speaking to a national conference, she implored lawmakers to call their congressmen and have them support the federal medical assistance percentages, FMAP. Basically, it helps to reimburse states for the increased medical costs they have for Medicaid and such. And she said that some 30 states, including Kentucky, faced big budget shortfalls if not for that help from the federal government. $200 million, I believe, in Kentucky. The question is, do you support the continued subsidy by the federal government for states like Kentucky, or do you think that those states need to get their own budgets in order on their own?
Well, I think it's going to be very challenging for the states to do this because they have a balanced budget amendment. So they have to put out a balanced budget. When the federal government keeps putting out mandates that states can't afford, at some point those states are going to opt out. And if the state decides to opt out, then everybody in Kentucky loses, or whatever state that is. So I think we've got to figure out a way to make things solvent, but I don't continue federal governments and bailouts. I don't have that same ideology as John, where the government is the solution to everything.
John Yarmuth?
Well, I don't think the government is the solution to everything, but we have 800,000 families or 800,000 citizens in Kentucky who rely on Medicaid for their basic health care. We're doing a great job in this area with Passport and managed care, creating some real savings for in Medicaid to try and take care of these needy families. These are desperate times, and as Todd said, we face some very uncomfortable choices. We can either ask the citizens of Kentucky to pay a lot more tax, or we can work with the federal government to try to make up the difference, and that's what we're choosing to do until the economy recovers.
But this federal government's $14 trillion in debt. It's not like they have the money to do it either.
So I'm clear from both
last word, I'm John Yarmuth.
Yeah, you give me a solution, Todd.
Well, it certainly is not raising taxes on everybody.
You're letting that happen
December 31st at midnight. Everybody in this room, your taxes are going up. The estate tax, it's back December 31st at midnight. John Yarmuth voted to leave Washington. He could have stayed. He could have taken a stand. He could have said, I'm going to do it for you all. I'm going to do it for America. But he didn't.
John Yarmuth, response?
Yeah, on that question, the question of the Bush tax cuts, the fact of the matter was that no matter what we did in the House, we didn't have the votes to pass any particular measure. The Senate had already decided that they weren't going to act. This is a question of whether we add $700 billion more to the deficit, which is what Mitch McConnell wants to do. And if we had stayed around doing nothing, we would have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting there twiddling our thumbs while we waited for nothing to happen. So, yeah, it was, I wish we had voted, but we weren't going to accomplish anything. We will pass a change in the tax law so that the vast majority of Americans don't have their taxes raised before the end of the year.
Okay, that's the time. Joe Girth, I'm going to move on here. It's a question for John Yarmuth.
Okay. Congressman, Medicare. The insurance program for seniors and disabled is set to run out of money sometime in the next decade. What specifically would you do to save Medicare from bankruptcy?
Well, we took an extremely important step when we passed the Affordable Health Care Act. According to the trustees of Medicare, because of what we did, we've extended the viability of Medicare from 2017 till 2029. And we did that without reducing any benefits for any senior citizen. And AARP has validated that, and any number of independent observers have validated that as well. What we did was we took some subsidies that are now going to insurance companies and to some other providers. We reinvested 60% of that into the system so that seniors now can have the donut hole reduced for themselves so they don't have to pay more for the prescription drugs. We put preventive care in there. We put free annual physical in there. And again, all of that without adding a dollar to the deficit and extending the life of Medicare for 12 years.
Todd Lally, 30 seconds.
Okay, in 30 seconds, we got 10,000 baby boomers going into retirement every day. John Yarmuth voted to cut $500 billion from Medicare. When we have that many people going into the program, how in the world can we stop funding it by $500 billion? I've talked to people in this community who have already lost their jobs with Humana because of the cuts to Medicare Advantage.
Okay, another question from our audience. Steve Wenger wants to know your specific plan to create jobs in the 3rd District. John Yarmuth.
Well, I think we've shown that we can do that. Again, through some of the tax initiatives that we've advanced, General Electric is bringing back 830 jobs, including 430 jobs from China, to build a hybrid water heater. That's one thing that we've created. It's a bill that I've introduced to extend a tax credit. If you make energy-efficient appliances in this country, you get a tax credit. That will help GE. We've worked with Ford to make sure that they are expanding and creating new jobs here. We passed, again, just recently, the jobs bill with 16 different tax cuts for small businesses and additional lending capacity. We have more to do, but again, we've got to create the environment. That's what we're trying to do. And by the way, until the very last minute, Mitch McConnell and the Republicans blocked that bill in the Senate until the very last minute, until public pressure enforced them to act.
Todd Lally, 1 minute.
Okay, nice job. 10% unemployment. 1.2 million people left the search. They said, we can't find jobs. I'm just going to give up. I'm elderly, or not elderly, but I'm getting up in age. I can't find a job. So they left the job search. 1.2 million. If they had stayed in, we'd be somewhere closer to about 10.2%, 10.4%. What people want, what businesses want, is they want stability and they want predictability. They're not getting it with this Congress. You cannot continue to pass trillion-dollar bills that make people nervous, and people are nervous right now. I have heard it for the last 12 months as I've gone all over this district trying to represent the people here. I talk to small business. They go, when you get up there, will you please just slow down, read the bills, debate the bills, and then vote on them? And I will assure the people of Louisville that I will do that. I will be able to work in a bipartisan way. I will have the best ideas from Democrats and Republicans, and we will debate those things.
Joe Arnold from WHAS-TV, a question for John Yarmuth.
Based upon his job performance the last 2 years, does President Obama deserve re-election?
Oh, I think he does. There are a lot of things that Barack Obama has done that I'm not supportive of. I really have a problem with his economic team, which I've expressed on numerous occasions, both publicly and to people at the White House. I think they have a Wall Street-centric approach, and they don't have people who really understand how entrepreneurs and business, small business people operate. They have academics in that role. But I will tell you one thing, and I've been in numerous meetings with the president. There is nobody in this country who is better equipped intellectually to deal with the complexity of the challenges that we face, whether it's foreign policy, domestic policy, you name it. He grasps it on all levels. I have problems with his team in some cases, but I think he does deserve re-election. And considering the possible alternatives, which are absolutely embarrassing, and I think that there's no question that he will be re-elected in 2012.
Todd?
I don't know what those alternatives are. I mean, we're still pretty far out from the presidential reelection. He's only been on the job almost 2 years. I think it's a little bit premature to say, does he deserve reelection? I think once we change the House on November 2nd, get a new speaker, get rid of Nancy Pelosi, we're going to force him to come to the middle. He's going to start having to understand that the American people don't want these far-left progressive agenda things jammed down their throat any longer.
Okay, Joe Girth, question for Todd Lally.
Yes, Mr. Lally, you've said throughout your campaign that you oppose abortion rights. Are there any instances in which you believe abortion should be legal?
Life of the mother.
John Yarmuth?
Well, I disagree. I do think that the Roe v. Wade decision is established law, it is valid law, and it accommodates most of the situations that occur, and I do believe that we should always make exceptions for instances of rape or incest, and my opponent disagrees with that, so we have a very significant difference of opinion. But on the issue of abortion, I respect everybody's opinion, and I believe they are sincere, and I don't question the validity of those opinions. I just happen to disagree with them.
Okay, that's time. This is a question from a student who is here who simply put SG on there, didn't put their full name. Does Kentucky rely too heavily on coal power? Todd Lally, your answer. 1 minute.
On coal power? Absolutely they do. When I ran for the state legislature, I had a very innovative plan to bury the power poles along Bardstown Road. There's 433 in a four-mile section. So absolutely, we have too many power poles. Cap and trade wouldn't have helped it.
Coal.
I thought you said power poles. Okay.
Sorry
about that.
C-O-A-L. I'm sorry. Maybe I mispronounced that.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Let's start over. I'll tell you what. Give him another minute to start from the top. I was wondering where you were going with that.
I was thinking that's an odd question, but
my apologies. Go ahead. 1 minute.
Okay. Does Kentucky use too much coal?
There you go.
I lived in Europe for a while. A kilowatt hour of electricity in Europe is 23 cents. In Kentucky, it's about 7 to 9. That figure comes from E.ON. I think when you're trying to attract people to Kentucky, bring your business here to Kentucky, it's the one thing that we have that we can use as a selling point. It makes us a standout amongst our peers, and I think having coal electricity here is a good thing for Kentucky.
Okay, John Yarmuth, what would you do about the poles on Bardstown?
I think Todd actually just came up with the first solid idea he had, which was to burn the poles for power. maybe we can do that. No, of course we do. Coal has served this Commonwealth economically extremely well, but the cost of it is dramatic. The cost to our environment is dramatic, not just the air. We're decimating the entire eastern portion of the state with mountaintop removal, something that is an absolute tragedy for this state and this country. So we need to look for an alternative. We need to And we have a lot of opportunities in this state with biofuels, and we're working on those and investing in those, and methane-powered utilities and so forth. So we do have opportunities. These are new jobs that can be created. We're down about two-thirds of the mining jobs actually have been lost over the last 30 years in this state, so it's no longer a source of great employment. We have the opportunity to create new jobs and a new economy and a cleaner future.
Okay, Joe Arnold, question for Todd Lally.
Back to healthcare one more time.
Okay.
Given reality, and that is that the healthcare law is law, and I believe, Mr. Lally, you've already acknowledged that it's unlikely that the Republicans would have enough votes in Congress to overcome a veto by the president. That said, what are you going to do if you are elected to Congress, given the fact that the healthcare law currently exists?
Well, there's two things that we can do. One, we're challenging in the courts. If the Supreme Court says that the individual mandate is unconstitutional, then they'll strike it down. The other thing we can do is Congress holds the purse strings, and we can find ways to either defund it or mitigate the way that it impacts small businessmen and individuals. I do think that the individual mandate is unconstitutional. I mean, in 2014, if you do not buy into these programs, into the medical, whatever they call these small clusters, then you're going to have to pay $695.
John Yarmuth?
This is about the individual mandate's about personal accountability. Everyone needs to be responsible for their own health care. Right now, $1,000 of every family policy actually goes to accommodate the people who don't buy insurance or can't buy insurance. We have $130 million a year of uncompensated care in Louisville right now. Obviously, I'm for the bill. I supported it. It's not necessarily the way I would have written the bill. I think it's a huge step forward. We need to keep tweaking it. We need to make changes, and I think we will. We'll be working on health care legislation as long as any of us is alive.
Do you have a follow-up, Joe?
If I could have a follow-up for both of you as well, in your vision of the overall solution to this, are private health insurers, are insurance companies still a part of that?
Todd Lally, you go first, 30 seconds.
I think if you look at the bill, this is an attempt to make private insurance companies go away. What will happen is if you have over 50 employees, you'll be penalized for every employee that you have over, for all your employees, if you're over 50, and they have to buy into these exchanges or provide health care. So what's going to happen is small business owners are going to say, you know what, it's cheaper for me just to pay the fine, and there you go.
John Yarmuth?
You know, right now, Humana, our great corporate citizen, derives over 70% of its income from administering government programs, Medicare, Medicare Advantage, Prescription Part D, and TRICARE. Almost all of its profit growth over the last 4 years has come from Medicare Advantage alone. There will always be a role for private insurance companies. In Germany, which is a single-payer system, the government organizes it, there are 200 private insurance companies. Everybody gets their insurance from a private insurance company, not from their employers. So yes, there will be a role for private insurance companies always, but only if they add value to the system, and that's what the ultimate value should, judgment should be.
Time's up. Joe Girth, question for John Yarmuth.
Congressman, some opponents of the Bridges Project have suggested that the project should be broken up into pieces in an effort to build the bridges without placing tolls on the roads. What is your position?
Well, it's clear that if we're going to build the Bridges Project as it is on the books right now, a $4 billion project, that some kind of new revenue is going to have to be available, because the normal gas tax revenues are not going to be adequate to do that. I came into this job after a debate of 15 years involving a number of municipalities, two states, and all sorts of interests who came to the consensus that this was the right project. Until those entities decide that that's not the best way to go, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that project is funded and completed. If we end up having to go in a different direction, then I'd be looking forward to working with whatever the consensus of these governments is. I think it would be very presumptuous of me to say I think we ought to go in a different direction after all of these interests have debated and compromised and come to a consensus over the last 15 years.
Todd Lally?
I think we could open up the record of decision. John has been on Riverfields. Everybody knows Riverfields has blocked every bridge project in our community for years. And I can tell you by supersizing this job, East End Bridge, Downtown Bridge, 23 lanes of Spaghetti Junction, that means no bridges for anybody. We can do an East End Bridge and we can do it without poles. Or tolls, sorry. See?
Got poles on the mind.
Or poles, perhaps. All right, this perhaps may be the last question. Comes from Joe Luber, who is here tonight. He says, as a representative of the people, should you vote the people's wishes, or should you vote for what you think is best for the people? John Yarmuth, you go first.
You know, that's a great question. Years ago, I worked for Marlo Cook back in my Republican days and worked in the Senate, and I asked him that very question. I said, when do you interpose your judgment? He said, I vote the way the people, I believe the people want me to vote, unless I feel I have different knowledge or more knowledge. In this day and age, with the dysfunctional media that we have and all of the disinformation that's out there, it's very tough for the average citizen to get a full sense of what's involved in legislation. So what I try to do is talk to as many people as possible, figure out the challenges that they face, what they need, and then try to craft policy that involves that. Again, legislating is very much like making sausage, as we all know, and there are no perfect bills. If there were a perfect bill, then we'd all vote for them. You always end up voting for something less than optimum, and you use your best judgment. That's all you can do.
Todd Lally?
I think we can all agree that you're going to alienate 40 to 60% of the people in any decision that you make. But the one thing that I've found from traveling all over the district is people know what they're talking about. They're not this ignorant group of lemmings that just want you to take care of them. When I go into a business, those people know what their business needs. I can't go in there and say, I know better than you. I'm up here in Congress. I will represent the people of Louisville, and I will do a better job than John Yarmuth.
Okay, very good, gentlemen. Now we're going into the closing statements. 1 minute each. As we said before the debate began, Todd Lally, you will go first. John Yarmuth, you will wrap up for us. Todd Lally.
Okay. When you look at where we're at a crossroads in our nation's history. We can either go down the path of more dependency, more government intrusion, or we can stop it now. We can go back to independence. That's what this country was founded on. We left Europe for a reason. We didn't want a tyrannical government. That's what we're getting. Tyranny is when you are scared of your own government, and people are starting to get that way. When we had the snowstorm in Washington and government shut down for 3 days, people wiped their brow and said, thank goodness, because today, they're doing nothing to raise my taxes. Today, they're not screwing up what is my business plan. So we can get back to that. We need to get back to that. You can send John back, and you're going to get Nancy Pelosi-style San Francisco politics. Or you can start new. Our country needs new. I love this country. I've served it in 3 wars, and I've been doing it for 22 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lally. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Mark, thanks again to you, Joe and WHAS for putting this discussion on. Again, I've spent 4 years not just working every day tirelessly for citizens of this community, but a lifetime, having been involved in healthcare, running small businesses, building small businesses, being involved in the journalistic community, for better or worse. But I did build a business that's 20 years later still functioning. This is a great honor to represent this community in the United States Congress. And by working with businesses, with labor, with our activist community, with our gay and lesbian community, with our minority community, I think I've established a record which shows that I am inclusive, that I talk to everyone, that I'm able to assimilate an awful lot of different issues and gain knowledge about them, and you bring all of my experience and primarily the input I get from citizens to bear in crafting policy that helps the most people. That's what I hope to continue to do, and I ask for the community's re-election.
Thank you. Okay, thank you both very much. There's one person we should point out that kind of held this debate together, Megan Waters, a freshman McConnell scholar. Thank you all for joining us tonight.